Hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Blind Android Users Podcast. I'm Ed Green and I'm joined by my co-hosts Warren Carr, Fee Dunn and Doug Cameron, and we're coming to you on the 21st of May 2022. We have a little announcement section this week, and then really we're going to be devoting our time to the spotlight section where we have a discussion about Android 13 Beta 2 and the features we didn't cover in last week's party episode. And then we'll talk about Google's announcements from Global Accessibility Awareness Day, which was on the 19th of May, i.e. last Thursday. And we'll close the episode with highlights from TalkBack with Warren. Well, here we are again. Dugaboo, how are you?
I'm not too bad. Been keeping busy, keeping, you know, in a little bit of trouble as expected. Doing a lot of yard work, a lot of prep for, you know, getting ready for summer and spring.
Yeah, well, that's good. Weather all right there? Temperatures reasonable?
They're not too bad. It's a little cool last few days, but I'll take it.
We'll move south. Wazza baby, how are you?
Thank you, Ed. Our weather has been kind of like up and down. In other words, we've had all that rain. I can't believe it. We've never seen such a rainy spring like what we had or what we're having right now. Yesterday was not even supposed to rain, but we had a torrent. And I was trying to mow my lawn, and here comes the rain. I had to run my head back into the house, and it would not let off for like an hour or so. And so by the time it was all done, man, I was just like, nah, I'm not going to worry about it. So, but other than that, you know, we're doing well. You know, it falls like into like 30s in the mornings and things like that. And that's okay. You know, daytime though, you know, we get, you know, like 50s and all of that. And today I think we're going to get up to 60 degrees or so. So we're really doing well.
Running your head into the house in frustration.
I'm running my head into the house, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like trying to get a Pixel to work to me. Sounds like trying to get a Fisher-Price phone to do what it should, no?
Yeah, no. Lay off my phone, bro.
iPhoner, how are you?
Not bad, thank you. Been busy doing a lot of work for my preacher training. Weather's been a bit strange in London these last few days. We've had lots of lovely sunshine, and then it was rain, lots of rain, and then thunder. But it was a bit pathetic. It was like, instead of crashing or anything, it was just like someone's tummy rumbling, and then that was it. Like, is that all really pathetic? Yeah. Anyway, today's weather's odd as well. It was cold, and then it was warm, and then it, well, basically typical British weather, really. But things are good.
The thunder wasn't good. It was not the chimes of freedom flashing, was it?
There was
nothing there at all. There was no Dylan in that thunder.
It was just meh.
My internet is happily back up and running. I was quite annoyed to have missed the party last week. We're on cellular for all our connections, and our network went out. But I'm glad to be back.
It went out. Where did it go?
I don't know.
Did it go to the pub?
It was there for a long time, so it got smashed because I didn't have it for about 4 hours. So it went to the pub.
You came home and it went to the pub. That's what it was.
I was going to do it from the pub, and you said I wasn't allowed to, so I hightailed it home, which is only about 3 minutes away, so it was no big deal. And then I got in, and there was no cell phone reception, so off it went.
I was thinking that, you know, perhaps maybe Ed got, you know, tangled up somewhere in a pub and, you know,
tangled up in blue. No, I didn't get tangled up in blue. No, I got home. You see, I was going to do it from the pub, and iPhone said I wasn't allowed to. So I'm like, okay, I'll finish my pint and go home then. And then I got home and no connection.
Did you go back to the pub after that?
No, I didn't. I tried to get the connection to work.
You should have gone back and then cry into your beer. So I saw your SMS message after we had finished. I said, okay, I now understand what happened.
Yeah. I think
staggered out.
I thought, blimey, that must have been a good pub session. He started the party early and forgot what the time was.
No, I told you I was back home. I put it on the group, I think. I said I'd left. But I don't think it would have worked in the pub either.
You said, all right, I'll go home or something.
No.
That was the last we saw.
Oh, no. I was back like 3 minutes later. Because it's really close. My local is not far. But anyway, I don't think it would have worked in the pub even if I'd have gone back.
So we're glad you are back today and that internet is up and humming along. So we're going to have a good party today. You didn't come to celebrate because of that. So everybody was waiting and waiting. Hey, you know, we need what do you call those guys that administer the parties?
Compare? I don't know.
No, what was the MC? There we go.
MC,
MC. Where's the MC guy?
Yeah.
And he was.
But you know, I was drinking Prosecco.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Exactly.
I opened the Prosecco.
Okay. Yeah, I listened back on the Sunday when my internet came back.
Yeah. Oh, did you missed us all?
Yeah.
No, I like the Prosecco though.
This last opening of the champagne was really good, Fee. Kudos to you. You did a good job. I really like it. It sounded really good.
It definitely worked.
Yeah.
And now we move on to our announcement section. And the only one really is that Austin isn't here. He's on holiday. So you're going to have to do without Austin for a bit. Do we know when he's back? Is it June he's back, Warren, or...?
So Austin is gone, you know, on a well-deserved vacation. I think he's gone for a couple of weeks. He's going to be gone even for the next episode. He wouldn't be here. And then he sent a teaser saying he may not be back till July. I don't know what's going on.
I just wonder if you got the month wrong.
I take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But our own Austin is not here.
No, it's not that well deserved, is it? It's on the day, I don't think.
So we'll be waiting for Austin to come back, and we'll send him a teaser wherever he's hiding at, and hopefully he's having a great time where he's at.
And now we move on to our spotlight section, and it's a double bill this week. We are firstly going to talk about Android 13 beta 2. We touched on this a little bit, or you did, I wasn't there, in the 75 party bus episode, but we're going to have a little look at some of the more in-depth features. So Warren, what have you noticed from beta 2?
So what happened last week was that we really didn't get into it. You know, we mentioned some things here and there, most especially about the, enhanced security and all of that. Google, you know, it's been hopping along and bumping up the security and all of that. But I think that two of the most important parts that we didn't mention last week have to do with both the global search or local search and the global search that was taken away. You know, if you guys remember in Android 12, when we first got that search where if you invoke your app store, then you're automatically placed into the search. And in that search, so it's local first. In other words, local centric. So when I search for something, it tries to search locally on my phone. And then below that, it will show results either from the internet and then results from, you know, Google or whatever, things like that. And so that got taken away in beta 1 of Android 13. It was there in DP1 and DP2. And in beta 1, that thing was taken away. And we kind of like a little bit upset about it, but we knew Google was up to something. So they brought that back. And the good news about the fact that they brought this back is that not only did they bring it back, but now you can actually drag a search to your home screen as a widget or as a shortcut. In other words, if you're familiar with what we have in Chrome, so let's say I go to blindandroidusers.com on my Chrome and I tap on that more options, and then I go down to the share and I could choose to add that thing to my home screen and blah, blah, blah. Well, now
I thought you could already do that before.
But now what we have, though, is that this is even better because I don't have to go through Chrome to do that. If I go into my apps drawer, for example, and just type in blind Android users, and it shows up in there, all I have to do is long press and drag it to my home screen. So it's not like that part in Chrome where I need to tap on more options and then go tap on share and then go tap to send it to my home screen and all of that. So I really like that feature.
Oh, good. So you can now skip the whole Chrome faffage. That's good.
Yeah, so the whole idea is that you don't have to go through Chrome to do that. But the exciting thing is that, you know, at least that local search focus is back like what it used to be. And then we have the icing on the cake with the ability to find something and drag it to your home screen. So if something that you constantly use, you could just drag it to your home screen and call it good.
And you could search for icing on the cake and add that to your home screen.
Exactly. Maybe like your pizza that you had last week, Fee, maybe you could search for that and put it on the home screen.
That would have been handy when it disappeared. Yeah. I mean, listeners won't know about that. But yes, there was a bit of a pizza drama last week. It was found in the end. But yes,
it was very funny.
If my phone could have found it for me, that would have been handy.
I know. Now, none of us thought about this, though. You probably could have fired up Outlook or some other app to see if you could find it. You know, I'm looking for food. You know, go to that food mode and see if it'll find your pizza lying there in the oven. You know?
You'd use Be My Eyes, didn't you?
I didn't want to ring up someone random and say I'm an idiot and I've dropped a pizza and I can't find
it. They can't see your name and you can't see their name, so that there's no accountability.
Yeah,
it's
but
not like IRA where
you're
a paying customer.
But what if there was someone that you knew who answered it, though? Because I know some people who are volunteers on there. That would be,
There are over a million volunteers on Be My Eyes. Like, the chances of that are infinitesimal.
I know. I mean, I found it in the end. I was going to ask you about Outlook.
And they still wouldn't know who you were anyway, because they wouldn't see your name.
Chances that you'll hit someone you know is just like maybe one in a million.
And also, they can't see your name. Your name doesn't come up.
Your face might if you filmed yourself, but yeah.
But you're not filming yourself. You're filming like the back
using
of
your back
oven.
The oven.
Yeah. But no, I found it myself. This was a point of pride for me, you know, that I would find it myself, and I did.
I would say a point of principle, but it's a point of pizza fall.
Yeah. Oh dear me. No, I was going to ask you though. I opened Lookout the other day, and it wanted me to sign in. I was like, huh? Sign into what? So what was that about?
Well, in reality, if you open up Lookout, it should, if you have a Google account, it should have just followed that. But if maybe something happened, something odd happened, unless you have multiple accounts, then it might ask you which account you may want to use.
Yeah, I've had that before because I do have two accounts, but
yeah, that's
it
why.
Didn't, yeah, but it didn't list them. It just gave me a username and password thing. I was like, huh? Is this, what account does it want, Google, or do I have to make a new one? That was confusing. So I thought I'll ask you guys when I next spoke to you. I wasn't actually that bothered right then, so yeah.
Yeah, just Google.
Yeah, and it, that thing might have helped you in finding your pizza or, you know, one of those, you know, Super Sense, Envision, whatever.
Might
say, hey,
done.
I'm looking for something. So let's move on to the next item there in Android 13 Beta 2. And this one is particularly important for those people who are multiple language speakers. And this is where something like a multi-language TTS might come in. And that I'm talking about the ability to say, hey, I want to assign a particular app to use XYZ language. So, for example, you know, Ed speaks French and German. He may decide to say, hey, I want to set my Adobe scanner to use German and maybe my WhatsApp or whatever to use French. So I find that really interesting that Google was able to do that. And I think it's going to help a lot of people who have skills for multiple languages. So, you know, maybe they just want to, if you're not a an English speaker, but you want a particular app to be in English, you could switch that right there into English. And I think that's a very good thing. What do you guys think about this feature?
So are we talking about that Google will change the language of TalkBack? Is that what we're talking about? Or are we talking about changing the language you're typing in? Or what are we talking about here?
It's the language of the app, I think, isn't it?
Language of the app. So, for instance, you have your apps, and I'm going to show what I'm talking about.
Oh, you know, like the menu will be in Spanish or something instead of in English.
The whole app will be in that Spanish or in German or whatever. If I go into system settings, that's where it is found. And then, you know, this the language app or whatever. And you can choose that and tap on the app that you want to be in a particular language. That's what that is. And I thought that is absolutely cool. So if I have an app, let's say, you know, sometimes you find apps that are written in other languages. So if I get that app, for example, I could go choose, hey, you know, this app, I want it to be in English. I have an app like that. It's a Bible app, and it's like in Portuguese. It comes from Brazil or some place like that. And I don't understand Portuguese. And there was another scanning app like that, and we wrote to the guy, but he didn't have time to do it. This would be the time to switch that app into English.
So do they use Google Translate to change the language of the app, or how do we know how they do that?
You know, it's a mystery in the sense that, you know, maybe Google is doing something in the back end and therefore, you know, converting that particular app into another language. But I'm just glad, though, to see that we have something like that, because I think it kind of breaks through some language barriers and all of that, most especially like the example I just talked about. I got an app that I would like to use, but it's not written in my language. And so now I could just absolutely just switch it to English and be able to have access to that particular app. And I think that's really good.
I think that'll be particularly good for people who aren't English speakers, because there's so much of this stuff is in English or Spanish, or, you know, the more widely available languages. And if you're primarily, I don't know, a Dutch speaker or something, I mean, actually, most Dutch people are really good at English. That's the bad example, but just say, then being able to do that would be wonderful, because you'd get access suddenly to loads more things that probably didn't make much sense to you before.
Yeah, what I think is interesting about this feature, though, it's local, not global, isn't it? So you change individual apps, do you not, Warren, or could you change all of your apps to one language without actually having to go into the apps?
I want to go into my system settings here and see if I find that. So in order to get to what I'm talking about, you know, I'm in the system settings, and you go to system and languages.
System, languages, gestures, time, backup.
You go here.
System, navigate up.
Once you are in here, what you want to do is go to where it talks about languages.
System, languages and input, Gboard, in list.
You tap here.
Languages and input, navigate up, button, out of list.
Once you are in here in the languages where you have the keyboard and all of that, then as you scroll down toward the bottom, you're going to find something that talks about per app language.
On-screen keyboard, physical keyboard, speech, voice input, text-to-speech output.
Oh, you know, I went too
languages, far. Languages, English app languages, set the language for each app.
languages, set a language for each app. So if I tap here, for example,
app languages, navigate up button out of list, showing items.
What
one to
it
10
does is that it will show you all the apps that you could set to a different language.
Elizabeth Voice English GB.
Oh, no, those are my TTS.
At voice allowed reader, system default. At voice floating button, system default.
So you see, by default, they are following my system language by default. Now, if I wanted to change it to a different language, for example,
at voice sync plugin, system default.
I have so many at voice allowed things.
Adobe Acrobat, system default.
So let's say I want to change Adobe to some other language. I haven't tried it. I'll have to tap here.
App language, navigate up, button, out of list.
And I'm going to see if I needed to have those language packs installed or whatever in order for it to work or not. But so after tapping on that.
App language, Adobe Acrobat, in list. System language.
So I got
English, United States. Spanish, United States.
There's Spanish.
All languages.
And if I tap on all languages, I should be able to go look for another language, I believe. Let's see.
English, United States, Afrikaans.
There we go.
Azerbaijani, Latin. Catalan. Czech.
And on and on.
Danish, in list.
Things show like that. So that's how you would go about changing that app into some other language. And I thought that that is absolutely clever. You know, as it brings accessibility, and I'm not talking accessibility in the sense of accessibility that we know as people with disabilities, but, you know, meaning having access to something that otherwise one couldn't have had access to. So I think that is absolutely a huge game changer that Google has implemented, and I'm glad to see that come to this beta too.
Are there any other beta 2 features you wanted to highlight?
I think those are probably the most important ones, because some of them are just like, you know, improvements on what we already have in DP1, DP2, and beta 1. But these are the ones that actually stand out for me.
Excellent. And in our next item, we'll probably touch on things that might arrive in beta 3 or the next one. Our next item as part of this section is what Google announced on Global Accessibility Awareness Day. That was the 19th of May, so last Thursday from when we're recording. And there were quite a few interesting things in this. Two or three announcements that certainly I was going to mention. Warren, shall we start with changes to the Play Store and the accessibility tag for different apps?
You know, given the fact that this was the, this week was that GAD, you know, Global Accessibility Awareness Day that you mentioned earlier, Ed, it does make sense that we talk about this. And of course, Google wanting to do something for the Global Accessibility Awareness Day, you know, announce these things, changes to the Play Store. You know, if you're like me, you know, there's sometimes when you go to the Play Store, you try to download an app and then you find out that app is not accessible and all of that. And it's something we've been talking about for quite a spell, wishing that Google would have badges to apps that are accessible so that when one goes to the Play Store, one knows which ones are compliant and which ones are not compliant when we talk about accessibility. And finally, to see that Google bringing that to the Play Store, and now we'll be able to see apps that have those tags of A11Y accessibility and or whatever. But then, you know, we have different categories of accessibility. If that particular app meets this accessibility, whether it's visual, whether it's dexterity, whether it's, you know, hearing and all of that. So you guys, are you excited about this? I'm excited about this. Yet in the same breath, I'm kind of like, well, Google, that is great, but that does not enforce, you know, accessibility, because I would rather want to see something that Google says, hey, you know, everyone that is doing something or publishing their apps on the Play Store have to make it accessibility compliant. You know, that's what I'm, maybe I'm a little too radical on that. But
no, it was exactly what I thought. And I know you can run compliance things to check whether your app's accessible. I just think that probably the running of that accessibility compliance tool should happen by default. Whether you fix the errors or not, I guess, is your issue. But if to check you whether your app is accessible is something you need to do, then you're probably not going to bother doing it. You know, there'll be certain things that will never be accessible because of the sort of apps that they are. But yeah, I think they could get a bit more proactive. One thing I wasn't sure about with this was whose job it was to assign the tag. Does Google do it and kind of using AI, or does the developer do it?
Google would use AI to determine which ones are compliant and label those and give them those tags. And so it's a monumental job, but yet in the same breath, it's easy for Google because it would be looking for certain keywords to determine whether an app, you know, meets such a criteria. So I think that it's a good start for Google. But like I said, frankly, I think I don't know who they're afraid of. You know, Google, you are the king. you should sit up on that throne and say, hey, your app has to be accessibility compliant. We're not talking about, you know, apps that we know are out of our range. I'm not going to ask someone for a sketching app to make it accessible for me, you know, when it requires, you know, drawing and whatever or things like that. We're not stupid. You know, we know what we can and what we cannot do. We know our limits. But I think we need to have basic accessibility in every app. I mean, even if it's not an app that I'm going to be able to use, at least to know that this button is for this and that. I'm giving an example here. This email app that I would love to see us play with. I signed up for it yesterday. It's called Skiff Mail, you know, S-K-I-F-F Mail. It's an end-to-end encrypted email. And because I know some people have been having some problems with their, you know, email messages, or, you know, they want some other email client. And, you know, this Skiff Mail is a prime example. There's absolutely no reason why the developer didn't make it compliant. I'm about to write them about it, and hopefully this is still in the access, early access, and maybe they would make it compliant. But so these are the type of things that I'm talking about. People doing things like this and uploading things to the Play Store without, you know, making sure, ensuring that we have access to it, I think it's just wrong. Absolutely wrong.
It is, but a really good way to get people to change that if they care enough, like, or even if they don't care as much. If you just message them individually, you might just not get a reply and nobody cares because nobody else saw. But if you do a review on the App Store, on the Play Store, if you do a review on the Play Store saying it's not accessible and then they still don't fix it because that review is there for all to see, you might get more results, perhaps.
I actually found the exact opposite. I was actually blasted, and then my comment was actually removed from the Play Store when I notified them through a review of an inaccessible app. So basically, the way I see it is, unfortunately, until every jurisdiction that Google is in has some level of accessibility legislation mandated, I don't know we're ever going to actually get to a point where every app that's realistic to be accessible will be. Because using Canada and the US as an example, the US has the accessibility legislation, where Canada, it only applies to the federal spaces. So if there's an application that's built in the US that's not accessible, you've got routes to go through legal channels if necessary, where here in Canada, you have absolutely no control. They don't have to make their applications accessible. So my thing would be if Google implements a cross-platform accessibility requirement, it technically can't be enforced, which then would mean more applications would maintain their inaccessibility. And I do think we may have to start giving incentives to some of these app developers to make their apps accessible, because some of them just, they either don't have the understanding or they just don't care enough to do a couple extra codes to make it accessible for those, especially with vision loss. But even then, some apps for video have no subtitles for those who are deaf. So again, is it a lack of education, a lack of caring? And is that something that Google themselves has the capacity to mandate without drastically losing applications being published to the Play Store and us seeing more and more third-party app stores popping up? Like, I don't know that there's going to be a good answer to this.
I think some of the compliance tools could be more proactive, couldn't they? And then whether a dev fixes it or not is kind of their thing. I mean, I don't mind third-party stores. I mean, that's sort of what Android's for, isn't it? You know, it's not iOS. You don't have to jailbreak your device and use Cydia. Whether or not you choose to sideload apps, I know Warren doesn't. I do, because I don't view it any different to installing an app on Windows outside of the Microsoft Store. Obviously, you've got to be careful. I don't mind third-party stores on Android.
No, but I actually quite like it. But it's just going to be one of those things where we're then basically, we're already kind of open to the Wild West when it comes to apps. I think the legislation and mandates from Google, just, I don't know that there's a way to enforce it.
But I don't think that there doesn't need to be a legislation. Government doesn't even have a place here, because I'll give you an example in why I'm saying this. If you guys are familiar with Fairmail just got removed from the Play Store yesterday because Google claimed whatever, blah, 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 you know, violated whatever, even though the guy explained it. So what I'm trying to say is that actually Google could implement this on its own. This is the... this is how we want apps to be on our Play Store. If you're going to publish your app on the Play Store, it has to meet XYZ criteria. And it's very simple. It doesn't mean that your app cannot be uploaded. So, you know, you'll get a message say, hey, your app is failing in this. You need to correct this in order to have your app published on the Play Store. As simple can be, frankly. So, to me, I think it's all Google. Google is the one that's given this leeway for this bad behavior that we're seeing from some of these developers.
Oh, well, I don't know. This happens on iOS as well. There are some apps.
I don't care about iOS. I'm talking about the one that I use.
Yeah, but you can't say it's just Google, because that's not true. Well,
we're talking about Android. Though.
I'm not talking about iOS. I don't care what
Android
iOS
podcast.
Does.
Yeah, of course, but it's not factually correct to say it's only a problem on Google.
It is factually correct, because they're not talking about iOS. No,
it is factually correct, because it's the apps that I use and it's the app store that I use. And all I'm saying is that, frankly, no government has anything in here. It's all dependent on Google. If Google says your app does not meet this accessibility requirement, you are not publishing it on the Play Store, it's simple.
So actually,
they're not going to do that, though, are they?
Actually, technically, Warren, government does have play, because if you look, I'm going to use probably a poor example, but it's one that's factual. If you look right now, Epic Games, the ones who've created Fortnite, they removed the ability to use Google or Apple stores for purchasing in-game money. That has created a legal lawsuit between Epic and Apple. So you start having companies or app developers being removed from the Play Store because of application inaccessibility, you're actually opening the door for lawsuits, which then does bring the legislation into play.
I don't think that is something that is related to this. This has all to do with money thing, whatever payment systems. But frankly,
the concept does apply.
I'm talking about language design of an app.
Yes, you know, but it still applies.
No, let me explain.
You could sue someone in your country for not making it accessible. You could, and they might have to change their app.
In the US, you totally can.
I'm trying to say.
I'm here.
If I want to publish an app, for example, and, you know, if my app is not, let's say, forget about, you know, accessibility, for example. If someone publishes their app to the Play Store and does not, you know, have, you know, the buttons or whatever for people to know what they're clicking on, I'm telling you that Google would tell them, hey, your app is not operable. You know, people can't figure out what is going on. Sighted people can see something and realize that this means this and that, why don't we have the same access to where we could know and distinguish as to what button does what? It's very simple. And if that's true, why did Google implement the accessibility scanner that is intended for developers to scan their whatever? Like, I will say this again, and now, you know, people will agree with me. Google can enforce accessibility. Hey, it's part of our language development. If you're going to develop an app, we need to make it accessible to all. And there's no person on the face of the earth that will say, hey, you don't want to make your app accessible to people with disability. It's just wrong.
Yeah, but there are some things, like, for example, a music app wouldn't be accessible to a deaf person, or a drawing app wouldn't be accessible to us.
We've covered that. We've said there are certain ones that I'm not stupid. I'm not going to go out there and say, hey, I want a sketching app, you know, to be accessible.
Yeah, but if Google said it has to be all apps, then they wouldn't be able to.
There are certain criteria, because there are certain apps that can be used by both sighted and blind people, or both hearing people with hearing loss and people with hearing that they can use.
You'd have to specify what apps have to be accessible or something. You'd have to have or have certain categories where I don't know how.
And
you
they're
do
already
that.
Into categories out there. Google has the categories of apps, and so if your app falls in the general category of apps or whatever, you need to make it accessible. We're not talking about specialized apps. Specialized apps that I cannot use, for example, or, you know, maybe like, yeah, I want to use something like a shooting, targeting, or whatever stuff, and I'm not able to do that or whatever. I'm not asking for that. I'm just asking for, like, the one I just gave an example about, the skiff mail that I'm talking about. You absolutely don't need to have a special whatever. It's not a specialized app. It's just a simple email client. Why under heaven is this app not accessible and yet be allowed on the Play Store? That's my beef.
I think that one of the problems is because some of these app developers start off quite small, and there are a surprising, well, maybe it's not so surprising, there's a huge number of people who don't even know that blind people can use a smartphone at all. And if you're one of those people, and, you know, how can you know what you don't know?
But that's what Google I.O. is all about. You know, Google I.O. is for developers. Okay, and everybody.
Yeah, but you might
knows,
not know it's a thing you have to check if yeah, you see, have never heard of
you're
it.
You're missing my point. That's what I'm saying. If you're uploading an app, there should be a mechanism on the Play Store that will tell you, hey, your app is falling short because of the category of your app. Your app is the type that is supposed to be used by all, but it's not meeting XYZ criteria.
So
and it will take you to the guidelines where you can find how to make that accessible.
Yeah, they should do that. What was wrong with the app? Were the buttons not labeled?
It's just not labeled.
That's rubbish.
That's the problem. And so, you know, frankly, if you look at what I'm saying, actually, it would be helpful to the developers. It makes everybody aware of the fact that the world doesn't revolve around them. We have other people out there and all of that. But Google needs to step to the forefront. Just trying to tag this one as being accessible or this one not being accessible, to me, it falls short.
Yeah, maybe they need to phrase it differently and say you must have text labels for your buttons and then explain why. Because if you say to a lot of sighted people, this app isn't accessible, they'll say, I don't know what you mean. I don't understand.
No, you don't.
So it is about education as well, I think. And Google have got lots of money. They can educate people. They can afford it.
And they don't need to go out there trying to educate. Like I said, you know, you try to upload an app then that thing will automatically kick in and just tells you, hey, you're missing something here because of the category that your app falls into. It's supposed to have this and this such and such labels, but right now it fails, and here's how you can fix that. It's very simple. Very simple.
If they're not going to do that, and it looks like they're not, you know, I think we've got to be realistic about this. If they're not going to do that, these accessibility labels could be useful in terms of if I need to find an app for something and I need to do it relatively quickly, and it says it's accessible, as long as the AI works properly, that's the only thing I'm a bit worried about, if it is AI labeling it and not a person, it could save me time. You know, for example, if I wanted, I've been writing a sermon, if I wanted a Bible app, there's probably quite a lot of them. And if I can make it so that the accessible ones show up first, or it only filters out the accessible ones or something, that would save me a heck of a lot of time. So it could be a good thing. But I agree that, you know, apps that don't have labeled buttons, it's not good. And they shouldn't, you know, they should be made to label them. But I don't think that's going to happen at the moment.
I think inevitably it'll generate... probably not false positives, but you'll get a lot of false negatives, won't you? Like plenty of apps that are at least usable won't be tagged, I would imagine. Yeah. Maybe it'll be a less of a problem that inaccessible apps will be tagged as accessible, but I think a lot of apps that are perfectly usable won't be tagged. That would be my inkling as to where this will go.
Have they said it's going to be AI?
It is AI. Yeah, we'll link that, the page to our show notes in there. But, you know, it's funny, Fee, you mentioned the Bible app. So there's a Bible app that I really, really like, and that's called Logos, you know, L-O-G-O-S. And, you know, that app, for whatever reason, is not accessible at all. And so as coincidence would have it, I ran into this guy at church, you know, I think about a couple of years ago. And he was going to work for Logos. They're right here in my backyard in Bellingham area in the state of Washington. And I'm like, hey, you know, tell them, you know, this blind kid here is asking them to make that app accessible. You know, it's not accessible. And, you know, so he went, and unfortunately he didn't get the job if something happened or whatever. You think that people from organizations like this, that are, you know, religious organizations and things like that, would even be more in tune to the fact that, you know, you have other people, you're trying to reach people of all sorts and stuff like that and make their stuff accessible, especially to blind people who cannot read a written thing on the paper. But you now have something here in electronic version, make it accessible to them, but you think they would do that? No, they didn't. So, and I tried to call them, oh yeah, someone's going to call you about it. Did I hear anyone back? I just gave up on them, but maybe I shouldn't. So things of this nature, that's why I'm saying the answer lies with Google. If Google would just create a simple thing that checks, does a quick check upon trying to upload and just shows you, hey, you know, you're missing XYZ here, I think it's going to help everybody.
I think it's interesting what you say about that app, though, because I think a lot of sighted people think that they don't realize about things like TalkBack. So they think, oh, we can't do this accessibility because we haven't got time to make it into an audio Bible, because they don't realize that that's not necessary. So I think we maybe need to request things more specifically and say, I can't use your app because you haven't labeled the buttons, for example. I think that if they realize that all you want is for them to label the buttons, they might go, oh, actually, that'd be really easy to change. Whereas if you're not very specific, and I don't know what you said, but if one generally is not very specific and just says your app's inaccessible, most people are going to go, I don't know what that means. I don't know how blind people do things. I've got too many things to do. And so yours will fall down the back of the drawer because it's too complicated looking. So I think we need to help these companies a bit by being more specific sometimes. with our requests.
I am very, if there's anyone that is always very clear when I try to report something to a developer, it has to be me. I go through the process and explain it to them. And then I also send them pages and send them, little video clips of me trying to show them what the app is doing that is not following accessibility guidelines and things like that. There's one called Bubble Up. I've been meaning to show it on our podcast, but Bubble Up is not very accessible. And I talk to the guys and, I send them a video clip about it. They said they're going to look into it. But so I'm one of those that usually will send a video clip and explaining to them and also sending them to Google pages to further explain what I'm talking about. But it's important, Yafi, you're right. If you're going to send a report to a developer, make sure you know exactly what you're talking about so that they're not confused. They're not thinking you want them to create an audio version. That's not what we're talking about. And show them exactly what that is. And sometimes it doesn't even hurt to show them, hey, if you bring up your accessibility or bring up TalkBack, you'll see what I'm talking about, or here's such and such an app, and here's how it works. And if you look at this app, it has all those correct labels, and yours does not. But if there's anything, like I said, try to show them a little video clip of it if you are able to. But if not, give them those help pages. It always comes in very handy.
Help pages might be good. I don't know about videos. If it's literally that someone hasn't labeled their buttons, they're just graphics, I would just say, at the moment, this phone is just saying button, button, button. I don't know what any of these do. Please add text labels. And unless they ask me to, I wouldn't bother sending a video. Because again, if you're a busy developer, the video might just be too much of an attachment you haven't got time to open. So it depends on the developer, I think, and how much time they've got and how big the
company
is. You can
never know that, though. You can't know how much time an individual developer has, and a screen recording will show them what's going on.
Yeah, and actually, a lot of them like to see that because they want to see what they are talking about. Yes, remember, sighted people are all about visuals. And,
when
you touch a thing, they know what I'm touching. And I said, okay, like this one here, I don't know what this button does. And they know exactly what you're talking about. And I tell you, the videos are very crucial. A lot of people that I ask about labeling things, they will say, hey, if you could send us screenshots or videos or whatever. They like that because then it saves them time knowing what area you're talking about that is not accessible.
That's good to know. I appreciate you saying that because that's good for me to know if I need to report something, because I could use one of those screen recording apps that you've talked about before, and send them. But I'd say because if it's something as simple as the buttons aren't labeled, which it's not simple, it's really annoying, but it's simple in probably in terms of programming, I would try and keep my video quite short.
Oh no, well, no one is going to keep a video long, but sometimes the the language that I use, maybe I say, hey, your buttons are not labeled. And maybe he doesn't call them buttons. He may call them controls or whatever. And he may not know what I'm talking about. But if I show him in a video, he knows exactly what I'm talking about. That thing is not giving me a feedback when it engages my screen reader.
Yeah. And I mean, some apps, it's worse because it doesn't even tell you when you're on a control with some of them. And they're the worst ones. Where you touch the screen and nothing, as far as we're concerned, nothing happens. That's very annoying.
So Google, if you're hearing the BAU, Blind Android Users Crew, you guys need to do more. I love you guys, to death. But frankly, I'm glad we have this. But like, Ed says, there may be some false positive or whatever, because some nice app may be missed by the AI and all of that. I think that the most important thing is that Google already have a tool there, the accessibility checker, integrate that into their development kit, Android Studio or whatever, so that when you are developing and that app falls in that category that is for everybody, it will let you know you are missing XYZ. I think that's my contention.
Maybe with the AI, they're doing it as a sort of, I mean, I don't know what Google's going to do next. Nobody does apart from them. But I wonder if they want to see how well this works with the AI first before they try and enforce anything else. Because if the AI isn't actually as reliable as they hope, you know, flagging things as inaccessible when they're not, for example, that could be a problem. So maybe this is a bit for trial. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens next.
There's no suggestion it's a trial, I don't think. I think they are...
No, I don't mean a trial as in a beta, but I mean a trial as in maybe they're seeing how well it goes down with users. How, do you know what I mean? You know, to see how reflective it is of reality and whether there are... I mean, I hope there are going to be ways where we, for example, can say to Google, actually, this app's really accessible. Can you add it to your list of ones that is? Or is it all going to be down to Google? It'd be a shame if it was all down to Google, because otherwise, like we've been saying, things might get missed that are actually really good.
That's a good idea, Fee, because that's the very thing Ed was afraid of, you know, because maybe something could be missed, an app that is otherwise accessible could be missed. And so if there's a place on the Play Store there that, you know, we could, you know, manually say add it to the list of whatever accessible apps, I think that that's also a nice idea.
I think someone would have to check them. Because obviously a developer could just log in with a different account and go, add my app to your accessibility thing just to make them look good. So I think Google would have to check it. But yeah, I think being able to suggest new apps would be good. Or maybe they'd have to have so many reviews that said it was accessible or something like that.
Google relies too much on AI, and so I'm hoping that this AI would be able to flag apps that are good, you know, label, tag those apps that are good to us as blind people, or, you know, people with hearing loss or people with dexterity issues, because that's what we're talking about. And like you said, we'll see what happens. You know, it's right now only a handful of apps, and especially, like, you know, example, you know, Google Accessibility Suite is one of those. But, you know, so we'll give this thing maybe to the end of the month. I think we should, the end of the year, we'll come back, you know, touch on this again sometime toward the end of this year and see where we are so far with this tagging of apps. But again, I always go back to my default Google needs to just have something in place that would remind people that their app is not meeting accessibility requirements.
A couple of other things that Google mentioned on Global Accessibility Awareness Day, one of which we knew about already was about the Braille support being built into TalkBack. Sounds like that'll be in the next beta. I think what is a bit disappointing is that they haven't supported the human interface driver. I've no idea why not. It's an open standard. They supported it in development. Why you wouldn't support, you know, the humanware displays and other ones that use that, you know, effectively open plug and play, so we don't have to install different drivers. I don't know. They do need to sort that out. Why you would do that? It's been around long enough. It's not new. Any views, Warren?
You know, I think it's a good thing that they have done. You know, this is something that we've been asking about for quite a spell. You know, we've been talking about wanting, you know, easy use of the Braille thing. I know Braille Bag was there, but Braille Bag was not getting the kind of love that we wanted to. And, you know, all the scrolling issues and all of that, being able to pan pages was not there and all of that. And I'm hoping that this one, when it drops, you know, from the sounds of it, if you look at that YouTube clip that was there on Google I/O about the Braille support, which is going to be part of Android 13. And I'm not sure if it's going to be part of beta 3 or not, or maybe it's going to be integrated with the final product of Android 13. But definitely this is a huge step forward, and I'm hoping, you know, that this thing would only be refined and made better as we go along. I think it's going to be a game changer for those of us who rely on Braille displays and things like that. And when we talk about this, you know, the people that always come to my mind are, you know, our friends who have difficulty hearing or deaf, blind people. This will help them.
Yeah, it does need to support the new standard, though, doesn't it? They need to have human interface. Yeah, I think
I think this is something that they will kind of look into. I'm sure, you know, because we didn't even expect or anticipate that this one was coming, and here it was. So who's to say that, you know, they're not going to do that? I'm thinking that, you know, maybe sometime, you know, who knows, maybe next year or the next 2 years, you know, I'm sure Google will look into that to make that compliant.
And I've heard another rumor about the Braille support, which is I know iPhone doesn't think it makes nearly enough noise when it pairs. So apparently they've trebled the sound of that noise. So it's really, really loud now.
Oh, no. And
I'm
how?
Joking.
Wait, is that on Food Braille?
That's mean. Hang on.
No, it's an Android. It goes dee every time it pairs, and you can't turn it off. Whatever you do, if you put your phone on Do Not Disturb or whatever, it'll always go bling.
It's really annoying.
So I thought I'd tell her they trebled the decibels with that. iPhone didn't think it was loud enough.
How are we going to know if our Braille devices are supported then by this new?
If it's supported now, it will
show up.
The ones that aren't are the human wares. There's a human interface device standard. If your device works down, it'll continue to work. If your diverse wikes, it'll can turn you to wike or wick. Yeah. So if it works now, it'll still work.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So mine will still work then.
Yeah, of course. If yours already works, it'll work. I think some of the humanware stuff is just have not always been. I don't know what the deal is, but
they're a bit proprietary, aren't they?
No. Well, that's the thing about human interface device standard. That's the point. It's not. It's an open standard, and Google aren't supporting it, which is the annoying thing.
So what are we using
all the proprietary ones that they've built in support for all the other displays apart from the ones using the open standard, which is very odd because Google supported the open standard. So it's a bit annoying, and they shouldn't have done it.
It's going to be a good thing, and I'm glad to see Google, you know, stepping up into the right direction, because this is something we've been talking about. And I'm sure that would help with some of the scrolling issues and that Brailleback, you know, was short on.
Another announcement, which isn't really Android related, but nonetheless is quite good, is that all YouTube originals now in English will have audio description tracks in English, and they've backdated that into the past year of release. So you can go into settings and turn on that track. For anyone who watches YouTube.
That's right. That's true. And, you know, that's a very good thing that is coming to YouTube, or is now available in YouTube, but it's only in English. Yeah. But at least it's a good start. You know, we'll get there. The idea is for it to proliferate to other languages as well. But, you know, right now you've got to start somewhere, and this is a good beginning.
YouTube originals.
Yeah, so films that you Google's is Netflix event, essentially. So not your friends' videos. They're not going to be audio.
So do you have to pay for these YouTube originals?
No. Like, for instance, if I go to YouTube and I want to search for Mickey Mouse, and I'm being silly here, I love Mickey.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I have something that, you know, is uploaded either from Disney Studios or whatever, or for, you know, some other, because you can find movies on YouTube as well. So those originals will have, you know, that description.
Oh, good.
Yeah. but it's not going to be my own YouTube, you know, me playing with the new cat we just got. good luck on that one.
Excellent. The other thing I think is quite good, though it's not particularly relevant for this podcast, but nonetheless, I quite like is they've introduced multi-pinning for Google Meet. So before, you could only have one video tile pinned, but apparently deaf people wanted to see both their sign language interpreter and the person actually speaking. So now you can pin two tiles. So
that's good.
You can see both of them, which is quite a nice thing.
That is good, because you might want to see the facial expressions and things of the person who's talking, because if you're deaf and you can't hear their voice, their tone of voice. Yeah, that's really good.
Exactly.
And also, you know, in your work meeting that two people hate each other, so you might want to pin both of them to see how they react. It's not just for deaf people.
Exactly. So it's not just for the deaf. I think, that's what I'm talking about, you know, and that goes back to the accessibility that we were talking about. These things are not only good for those of us with disabilities, but in reality, labeling apps is good for everybody. So it's not just us. You know, if people should just see the impact that this will have for everybody, making things easy. Who wants complication? I don't. Yeah, so this is absolutely beautiful. I like it.
Yeah. Anything else about Global Accessibility Awareness Day, or are we done?
It was just me that had no idea it was even a thing until the day. Like,
I don't know.
I never saw anything about it beforehand.
There's a day for everything, you know. So lately, there's a day for everything. I think there was something. There was another day yesterday. I don't remember what the hell it was. Excuse my Espanol. But, you know, every day we've created a day for this, a day for that. And so if you're not, you know, looking for it, you're not going to know it. Now, there's an app that has all that stuff. I used to have that app. It's probably in my library. But, you know, it has all that stuff. You know what day is what day and all the day for this day and
But some of them are really silly, like National Squirrel Day or something.
National Squirrel Day is nuts, isn't it?
Well, maybe I should go get me a squirrel stew or something like that, you know.
Well, I think you've missed it. I think it's in January or something. But, yeah, I remember thinking, National Squirrel Day, what's that?
Oh, one thing about Global Accessibility Awareness Day, isn't A11Y an absolutely horrible, cliquey, non-inclusive, inaccessible hashtag that is utter nonsense? It's awful, it's inaccessible, and whoever came up with it ought to be shot.
But not the shooting bit. I think that's a bit harsh.
No, plenty of innocent people get shot. This person should get shot.
That doesn't make it okay.
It's absolutely awful.
It is like awful.
A11Y,
yeah.
Like, it's a cliquey in joke. It's inaccessible, non-inclusive. Let's get it binned.
Don't shoot them, but maybe taser them. I think they might deserve that.
Okay, so I'm wondering.
Maybe don't post that bit, because it might be seen as hate speech or something.
Here's what I'm thinking. Maybe what happens is that, you know, some people don't like spelling long words, or, you know, have difficulty spelling.
Yeah,
and
well,
maybe someone
says,
hey, how about we just do this? And it's not just A11Y. I think there are a few of these examples.
Yeah, but A11Y is the weirdest thing.
Just go access if you don't want to write accessibility. It's fine. You know, but it's cliquey. It's a little side-eye in-joke. It's awful. It should be binned.
The thing is that I think this was more of a thing when Twitter was only 140 characters.
It's
I first saw it on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's 301 now, is it? Oh, I thought it was 280. Well, it's more. Anyway.
240, so, I said, didn't I? Yeah.
I don't know why Twitter does this. Anyway, they should just open. It's like the good old SMS. I think the first person thought, you know, SMS was just going to be, hey, hello, how are you? You know, and then call it done. That's stupid. You know, I need to be able to say something.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, but, the selling point, though? Like, what is Twitter's selling point if it doesn't have a character limit, however limiting that is? If you extend that character limit,
well,
then
but
is
that
it?
You well, know, you the character limit is sometimes kind of muzzles what you are trying to say. You know, you're trying to tell someone, give someone instructions on something, and you wind up, you know, spending your time, you know, sending multiple stuff. That's stupid.
No, but a platform has to have a USP, doesn't it? So. Clubhouse, for instance, it was a voice platform, which was fine until it introduced text, and then it was a really crap platform because everyone did text and voice so much better. You need to maintain your USP, and if your USP is short form text message or messages, then if you abandon that, what you then look like is a really feature poor platform compared to everyone else that never had a word limit. Because all you ever had was your word limit.
And now Twitter just seems like a big load of photo sharing these days, which is annoying because most of those are not accessible to us.
Well, not A11Y anyway.
Yeah. Oh.
We need to campaign to get rid of A11Y.
Along with sight loss. That's annoying as well.
Yeah.
I don't know that it's going away anytime soon.
Well, we're going to get
rid of it. Well, I never use it.
It's one of those evils.
We're
going to
get rid of it. We're going to go and storm the temple and shake it and pull it down and stuff.
Like I said, you know, maybe someone who doesn't like, you know, spelling things and lazy and say, hey, how about we just do A11Y? You know, that takes
But if you don't like spelling, you then use dictation instead. Like,
anyway.
Yeah.
We conclude this week with Warren's highlights from TalkBack.
We continue now with our theme of highlights from TalkBack. This is installment 36. In the last installment 35, I demonstrated the triple tapping and holding with two fingers to both mute and unmute TalkBack. Today, however, I'll be concluding the two-finger heading with the four remaining gestures. For today's demonstration, I'll be utilizing my Pixel 4 running Android 12 and TalkBack 12.1. For speech services, I am again utilizing the Google Speech Services. I am on the home screen now and will tap with three fingers to open up the TalkBack menu.
Android Accessibility Suite. TalkBack menu.
Here is my TalkBack menu. In the TalkBack menu, what I'm looking for is the TalkBack settings, which is basically the second to the last item at the very bottom. I'll now put my finger down and tap on TalkBack settings.
TalkBack settings.
We are now in the TalkBack settings, and if you've been following us in this series of highlights from TalkBack, this is a time that we put two fingers in the middle of the phone and then glide those fingers upward to scroll down the page. I'll now put those two fingers down and glide them upward to scroll down my page. I'll now put my finger down, find and tap on Customize Gestures.
Customize Gestures.
Here is Customized Gestures. I'll tap here to activate.
Customized Gestures, out of list.
We are now on the customization page of our gestures. This time, I'll switch my granularity to the headings granularity. And if you've been following us, we have one of three methods of changing the granularity. We could swipe up and down in one fluid movement with one finger to circle through these granularities, or you could swipe down with three fingers from the top or from the left or from the right to go through those granularities. As I have indicated again and again throughout these demonstrations that I prefer the one-finger gesture of scrubbing up and down to change my granularities, I'll now utilize that up-down swipe to change my granularities.
Spoken language.
Scrub up and down again.
Speech rate. Windows.
Do it again.
Links. Controls. Headings.
headings, and that's where we need to be. Now that we are on the headings granularity, what we need to do now is simply swipe down with one finger to move through the various headings. The heading we're looking for here is the two-finger gesture. I'll now swipe down.
One finger, heading, in list.
Swipe down again.
One finger back and forth, heading.
Keep going.
One finger angle, heading.
Swipe down again.
Two fingers, heading.
Here is our two fingers heading, and this is the one we're concluding today. As I indicated earlier, the last one that we talked about was a triple tapping with two fingers and holding to mute and unmute talkback. Today we'll be looking at the last four, which are very familiar to all of us, and that would be the swiping up with two fingers or swiping down with two fingers to move through vertical pages. In other words, just like I did earlier on when I was going through the talkback settings. And then we have the swipe left or swipe right with two fingers to move through horizontal pages. In other words, you will do that when you're encountering things like your home screen. In a vertical page or screen, however, we swipe up and down with two fingers. Now I'll move to those last items that I just talked about.
Swipe up with two fingers, scroll up, not customizable, disabled.
Here we encounter our first item and we're told it is not customizable. In other words, it's not changeable, it's disabled. And the reason why this is disabled is because this is a native gesture. In other words, this is a system gesture. For sighted people to scroll up or down the page, vertical pages, they'll use one finger. And for us blind people, as I've indicated several times, where it calls for one finger for a sighted person, those of us who are using screen readers will employ two fingers. And this is exactly what we're talking about. And the reason why we cannot change this, because it is a system gesture, not a screen reader-based gesture. And that's the first one. The next item.
Swipe down with two fingers, scroll down, not customizable, disabled.
This one also cannot be changed because it is a system gesture. So it's the opposite of the first item I just talked about. Let's move to the last two.
Swipe left with two fingers, scroll left, not customizable, disabled.
The same idea here. In other words, a sighted person wants to switch pages, horizontal pages, he or she will swipe left or right with one finger to move through the pages, switch from one page to another. And for those of us who are blind, of course we use two fingers to do those gestures, switching between those horizontal pages. Here's the last item.
Swipe right with two fingers, scroll right, not customizable, disabled.
And that's the last item here. And that's the last item that I'm talking about, the last four. And sometimes some people refer to them as a two-part gesture. I just refer to them as two-finger swipes, which we do either up or down, left or right. So in other words, if I swipe up now with two fingers,
four fingers, heading.
You can hear that it scrolls me down all the way to four fingers. Now I'm going to swipe down with two fingers.
Swipe right with two fingers, scroll right, not customizable, disabled.
It moves me back up toward the top. Now I'm going to go back to my home screen by swiping from the bottom with two fingers and let go.
Pixel launcher.
And I'm on my home screen. This is my first home screen. If I want to go to my second page, in other words, if I'm switching home screens, I swipe from right to left with two fingers and that advances me to the second or to the next page. The surefire is always to do that from the middle of the phone. I'll now swipe from right to left to move to page 2 of my home screens.
Home screen 2 of 4.
I swipe from right to left again.
Home screen 3 of 4.
Do that one more time.
Home screen 4 of 4.
And I am on my fourth home screen page. Now we'll swipe from left to right with two fingers from the middle of the phone.
Home screen 3 of 4.
Do that again.
Home screen 2 of 4.
Swipe one more time from left to right.
Home screen 1 of 4.
And I am now on my first home screen where I started. And that concludes our last four gestures from within the two-finger heading gesture as we navigate through these highlights from TalkBack. Austin, how do people get hold of us?
For people to locate us, they can email us with their questions or feedback or comments or recording submissions to contact us at blindandroidusers.com. They can browse our website, blindandroidusers.com. Check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/blindandroidusers. Subscribe to our mailing list, blindandroidusers, plus subscribe at groups.io. The links for Telegram and Twitter, Clubhouse will be in the show notes with all the other links.
And that's it from us this week, folks. So we shall all see you next week.
Bye.
Later.
Bye, everybody. We love you guys.